Good morning. It's Friday, the 10th of May, and this is Govind Raj Ethiraj, broadcasting and streaming from and headquartered in Mumbai, India's financial capital. Our top stories and themes for the day. The stock markets take a dive as political uncertainty now rules center stage. Why market volatility, even at current levels, is still low? A perspective. Luxury homes are selling out barely as they're announced once again. Office rentals too are rising. And how the Tatas have inherited a full-blown union problem after decades.
This is a Core Report with Govind Raj Ethiraj.
The stock markets take a dive. How far could it go? It has been evident for the last few days that the stock markets are experiencing heightened jitteriness, mostly transmitted by the ruling BJP party's own jitteriness, possibly because it was not confident of hitting its own stretch target of 400 seats that it had set for itself. Now, the BJP may still hit that mark or come close, but the journey of the last mile or the next 3 weeks or so was bound to be accompanied with apprehension either way, as we've been discussing on the Core Report, and I mean the journey in the stock markets. On Thursday, the stock markets took a dive, with the Sensex ending about 1,062 points lower at 72,404. The Nifty 52 settled below the crucial 22,000 mark at 21,958, down 345 points. Now, the benchmark indices logged their worst session since the 23rd of January. The broader markets were expectedly weaker, with the BSE Mid-Cap Index declining 2% and the Small-Cap Index declining about 2.4%. India's volatility gauge, the gauge that we've been discussing for the last few days, or the India VIX, has now reached its 52-week high at near 19, reflecting, of course, the fear or apprehension in the market. This also is the highest since October 2022. This is the fifth straight day of sell-off for these benchmark indices, that's the Nifty and the Sensex. Now, there are, of course, other reasons, including the fact that Q4 or fourth quarter and full year results have been a mixed bag and foreign institutional investors are selling. Now, foreign institutional investors in general have sold or sell at these times, but at this time, clearly, they are not the guys who are triggering this fall. The current mood is clearly political and will be, with ups and downs till June 4th being the days the results will be announced. All of this makes it a difficult market to call and can also be a little difficult to say which way things will go. But jittery as they are, the good news is that domestic flows are strong, as Birla Sun Life AMC CEO A. Balasubramanian told me in an exclusive interview, with some very insightful data that will play out over the weekend. But an extract of that interview is coming up shortly. Elsewhere, the State Bank of India surprised the markets with a 24% year-on-year growth in net profits to about 21,000 crores on the back of high interest income and low provisions. Now, interestingly, this number beat analysts' estimate by a wide margin, who had pegged profit after tax in the range of about 10 to 14,000 crore rupees. The stock was up close to 4% in a falling market. Oil has risen again, now to $84 a barrel, though it's been on a downtrend since April, as we've been reporting here, posting losses in three of the past 4 weeks, with weakness in processing margins as well. Bloomberg is reporting that the decline has come as much from the geopolitical premium from tensions in the Middle East unwinding and also bringing traders back to focus on a cooling market. Meanwhile, refiners in India, that's BPCL and HPCL, reported between 35% and 25% lower profits as refining margins fell, thanks to higher prices in the quarter. Elsewhere in the region, China's exports rose slightly more than expected in April, even as its imports increased. Export increased about 1.5% in dollar terms from a year earlier, reversing a drop in March, according to the Chinese Customs Administration on Thursday, quoted by Bloomberg. Now, that left a trade surplus of $72 billion. Yes, it's a surplus for the month. India's trade deficit for March was lower at about $15 billion. When I say lower, I mean as compared to the previous month. Meanwhile, countries are complaining against China about its overcapacity, which is hurting factories elsewhere and obviously prices too, notably in the electric vehicle space. The groundswell of complaints about China's factory output keeps getting louder, but there's no sign Beijing is ready for fixes that might backfire on its vulnerable economy, Bloomberg reported, adding that this week, European Union leaders who are threatening tariffs on electric cars were the latest to scold China about overcapacity. China has responded by saying that Chinese industry is competitive thanks to innovation and not subsidies. How to play volatility? Now let's return to the markets. Birla Sun Life has nearly 3.4 lakh crores of assets under management, or 340,000 crore rupees, or about $37 billion, and about 8.5 million investors who have invested in its various schemes. Its managing director and CEO A. Balasubramanian has worked with the fund in various positions for almost three decades. So I asked him, among other things, to lean back on his experience over the decades to ask about how investors should respond to volatility, including of the kind we're seeing right now.
So sometimes you see the volatility in the market that is more of giving up of not being that met the expectation of the predictions. Otherwise, it doesn't change the fundamental. Fundamental remains constant. And B re-rating and B de-rating, both actually swing the market price movements. That happens on the basis of the expectations being met, expectations not being met. So my own belief is what we are seeing after touching some of an index, we are seeing some of the volatility. But we ought to remember, volatility as a percentage, if you see, very small. In a market which has gone up by 70,000 index, suppose it falls by, say, 1,000 points. It's only 1%, 1.2% fall. But the same 1,000 point fall, assuming it happens, is 50,000 index. It's almost close to about 2% fall. My belief is, as the market is becoming more and more matured, I think fall will be relatively less bearable. It can be tolerated. At the same time, need not get necessarily get worried as if this fall or fluctuation is going to make me suffer big time. But anyway, every market has to go through a period of consolidation. I see a period of volatility. I also see a period of consolidation, nothing but sideways. It can frustrate you that why it is not going anywhere. Because for people want movement. It has to either go up or come down. If it remains flat in the range of, say, 1.5-2% kind of range, there is generally frustration level also gets set in.
And we've seen those periods many times.
We have seen those periods. In my own 30 years period, I have seen all this. I have seen a period of consolidation. I have seen a period of as if the world is not going to survive tomorrow, especially the global financial market crisis. All of us felt, being in the financial industry, whether it is the right industry to be there.
The full interview with A. Balasubramanian will play out over the weekend on the Core Reports weekend edition, that's on Saturday. Real estate stays hot. Elections or no election, real estate is continuing to pull in investments. Non-resident Indians are continuing to swamp new projects and project launches, up to almost 25% of premium projects of the kind that's coming up. DLF Limited has said that its latest luxury project, DLF Privana West, located in Gurgaon near Delhi, with about 800 apartments, is valued at about 5,600 crores, has sold out entirely within 3 days. In just January this year, DLF sold about 1,000 or almost 1,100 luxury apartments in Gurgaon or Gurugram once again for about 7,200 crores in its project DLF Privana South. Business Standard said that brokers it spoke to quoted a price range of between 6.4 to 7.1 crore for a four-bedroom hall kitchen measuring about 3,500 square feet and penthouse measuring about 5,400 square feet. So anywhere between 3,500 to 5,500 square feet for these apartments. Speaking of high prices, now in the commercial space, a new report by Colliers, the real estate consulting firm, has said that occupiers in the Asia-Pacific region are now prepared to pay higher rentals for superior quality offices, which is a general fact, I guess, but the report says Global Capability Centers, or GCCs, are driving India's office space demand, holding a 37% share in overall leasing activity for the first quarter of 2024. Now, Global Capability Centers are essentially technology centers or business processing outposts for global companies, but in India. Within all of this, Hyderabad and Bangalore collectively drove office market activity, the report said, accounting for about half of leasing and three-fourths of the supply in the first quarter of 2024. Rental rates surged by about 8% year-on-year across key markets. Now, the interesting thing is, after a decline during the pandemic due to low demand, occupiers leaving, as well as remote working, rentals have now surged in 2024 and have surpassed pre-pandemic levels, according to Colliers in a report quoted by Business Standard. Air India Express sends out termination letters. India Express, owned by the Tata Group, has stayed in the news on Thursday for all the wrong reasons once again after it said it cancelled 85 of its flights and was making every possible effort to minimize the inconvenience. Air India Express is a no-frills carrier. In a statement, the airline's spokesperson said it would be operating 283 flights and Air India would support it on some routes. However, it said that 85 of their flights were cancelled and they urged their guests booked with it to check if their flight was affected by the disruption before heading to the airport. Meanwhile, the airline late on Wednesday said it removed around 30 employees for going on a mass sick leave and it has given other members an ultimatum to either return to work by 4 p.m. on Thursday, that's yesterday evening, or face termination. Not surprisingly, the termination letter or a part of it was circulating on social media on Wednesday evening, alluding to the premeditated and concerted abstention from work without any justifiable reason. Now, the larger issue is that the Tatars are facing union troubles perhaps decades after their last encounter, maybe in Tata Motors or then Telco in the early 90s when Ratan Tata took on the unions. Now, Ratan Tata is, of course, much older and is not actively running Air India at this time. So the problem is really for the frontline managers to battle and grapple with. Air India itself, it appears, is carrying all the baggage that was responsible in many ways for the mess that it saw itself in, leading eventually to its going on the block. The Tatas, I would think, have no choice but to go firm and not make the mistakes the government made in the early days. I reached out to Sanjay Lazar, aviation consultant and Air India in-flight veteran who worked with the airline for over three decades, and I began by asking him what was driving the union's actions this time.
There were 18 unions prior to the Tatas entering this group of airlines. Okay, 18 in Air India alone. In Air India Express, there are two. So actually, there were 20 unions. They, in the end, whittled them down to about four in the main Air India and one in the Air India Express. You know, it's a legacy because it was a PSU. You had unions that came about because of the Industrial Disputes Act, whatever the reason. It's not that the Tatas did not know they were entering an airline with unions. They chose not to deal with any unions. They said, you know, they took a stand, they drew a line in the sand and said, we're not talking to any unions. We'll talk to you, but as an individual. We'll talk to Captain XYZ, but he's an individual. He's not the Indian Pilot Guild or he's not the Indian Commercial Pilots Association. This was, I think, as a part of their legacy from their own airlines, whether it's Air Asia or Vistara. Please remember, you know, the airline system grew up after the repeal of the Air Corporations Act in a manner, you know, where contractual employment took place. And in the legacy carriers, that's Air India, Indian Airlines, your Air India Express, you almost had permanent employment. In Air India Express, you had contractual when it started in 2005, and it has continued. So a lot of these were unionized employment. So the Tatas would have to deal with it, whether you like it or not. Now, it's not that the unions are striking willy-nilly, so to speak. I think in this particular case that we are referring to, this has been, you know, dragging on for a year, literally. I've been looking in, you know, reports in the media of people who've, you know, been writing letters back and forth, and perhaps it was not addressed under the guise, we won't deal with the union and stuff like that.
The letter that at least was in public domain seems to say that one of their concerns was that some of their seniors were being terminated. Now, that's not something, I mean, that is very classic union. I mean, I don't think in any company today, you would have a situation where one set of employees is striking saying that, oh, some of our seniors are being terminated, so we're upset. I mean, that's hardly ground for striking.
I wouldn't call this a strike. A lot of people fell ill at the same time. But let's understand. What they were actually trying to say is that a lot of seniors are being removed on lame excuses. Okay, and that's the core here. Now, we have to understand that in the PSU airline system, Air India Express was the most profitable of all the carriers. Actually, I'd go so far to say is, apart from IndiGo, in the last 15 years, we have not seen a more profitable carrier other than Air India Express. It is these same employees who are currently at the forefront of this problem, who were piloting those aircraft or plying their trade as cabin crew in those days. Now, if there are some adjustments, I believe it's time that even the employees put their shoulder to the wheel and say, okay, times are changing. The government has sold us. We need to get real. We need to understand that, you know, our work practices need to change. We need to save costs to become leaner, meaner, fitter. You're right. They talk, a couple of them did resign. No, you know, one or two got sacked, not many. 30 got removed for, of course, this action. But they've just been reinstated about 10 minutes ago. So I'm literally breaking it on your podcast. I've got the note. I've just tweeted the order. So it's a big day. The Tatars need to buy peace at any cost. There's a reason. Not because they're backing down. Because it shows their generosity as employers, as they've been historically known. You know, the Tatars are a great set of employers from the day of Jamshedji and, you know, JRD and everybody. They need to take on the competition, not only IndiGo. There is a competition with Emirates. There's a competition with Qatar. And Air India Express is the bulwark for them to capture that Middle East market. So I think we need peace.
Right, Sanjay. But the thing is, there's nothing that says to me, because we, after all, we saw something similar with Vistara just a month ago, that this will happen again. And if it happens again, obviously services are going to be crippled. Passengers are going to get upset. And they will stop flying because they have other choices, which was not the case, let's say, 25, 30 years ago.
Very correct, Govind. And I don't see this happening again. This has caught the Tatas and Air India by surprise, first of all. This was building up. I think they will now have a realization. They've had a dialogue with a trade union that is politically affiliated. Mind you, I think they neglected that this is belongs to the BMS, the Bharatiya Mazdoor Sangh, is an appendage of the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh.
All unions have some political affiliation, don't they? At least traditionally.
You know, this is an umbilical cord to the government, literally. So that's why there was a lot of pressure this morning from Labour and Aviation Ministry that this has to be sorted out either way. I think if they sit down and talk, you know, Govind, I've been in the both sides of the coin. I've been in the management. I've been in trade unions. I consult now. I look at airlines. And for me, you know, the airline is the passenger. The crew, the pilot, the management come second. You know, we exist because of the passenger. If we don't serve the passenger, then we shouldn't be there. That's my strong credo. Now, this group needs to get together. The employees will realize, I'm sure now, that they need to work with their management. They need to get together and go. I don't believe this is going to happen again. Because you see the difference. Now, I want to point this out. On the Air India side, there was a share purchase agreement which offered all seniors a voluntary retirement scheme under the Gujarat pattern. The government signed that. So about 2,500 of them left very peacefully. You don't hear any disruption in Air India, do you? And all of them have become contractual. All of them have switched to the new terms. And this was an organization that had 18 unions.
I think we all understand the history, but I think, unfortunately, whichever way you look at the history, the fact is the present market is a highly competitive one. You have players like IndiGo who are eating up share. You have players like Emirates who want to expand. And the only reason they can't is because the government is not allowing them to. Else, they would have been eating up more market share from Indian international carriers. So I think in this highly competitive market, and that's really my last question, is or are Air India employees ready for this new world? Because we thought they were ready. But all of this seems to suggest that they're actually holding on to a lot of things from the past, which is obviously extremely dangerous in a competitive environment.
Govind, I must separate Air India and Air India Express. The Air India employees are now just down to about 20% of the original strength. Everybody else is new. Air India, the big carrier. Air India Express is still 50% legacy employees. I think they've, you know, through this discussion and dialogue, they will reach peace. I have spoken to both sides, you know, during the course of the day. I have no doubt that they will get together with their bosses, their management, and, you know, pull their strength to the wheel. I don't see any problem going forward. The reason being, because this has, you know, been sorted out in such double quick time, in 24 hours, really. Yesterday morning, we were talking about cancellations and today we're talking of resolution. I don't think in the history of my life, in 40 years, 38 years of aviation, I've seen any resolution like this, 24 hours of working time. So I believe they will be ready. Those that are not ready will be given marching tickets, possibly. And they need to realize they're there for the passenger. The Tatas will, of course, you know, bring everything to bear and take this forward, I believe.
Right, Sanjay. On that optimistic note, and hopefully passengers will not get hit once again, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Meanwhile, before I go, now this is going to be a more frequent feature, and thank you to my listeners and friends for reminding me. So here's some feedback from the last few days. Ravi says that the day does not pass without listening to the episode. Thanks for keeping it simple. And Prasanna DG says, very super and informative, and it's authentic. And finally, from Suresh Advani, he says that I should have a tagline to sign off. And yes, indeed, we are thinking of it and we'll soon have one. That was The Core Report with me, Govindraj Ethiraj. Do stay connected with more of our coverage at The Core. You can check out our website or sign up to our newsletter for our exclusive stories, one in-depth feature a day on www.thecore.in. Do also track us on LinkedIn, where we usually post synopses or extracts of our top stories and interviews. We would love your feedback on how we can make business more interesting and relevant, including, of course, India's vibrant manufacturing sector. So write to us at feedback@thecore.in. And thank you once again for listening.